As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we are going to discuss Kevin Durant's debut.
Wow.
As a Brooklyn Net. So exciting. And I have a bit that I'm going to do of how I will, basically it's bad puns, first impressions of the Nets.
Not bad.
Under Steve Nash. And then we'll just mention a little bit about Kyrie Irving kind of calling the media pawns, but not really. I mean, apparently the whole thing. We're going to talk about it all.
Let's get to it.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike Irsalo.
Hello,
Brian.
Flat. Disgusting.
Go check on. Us out on Twitter, at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. There's a deal being had right now involving The Athletic. I think it is still active, and if it's not, I will remove this from the pod. But you can get 2-for-1 subscriptions, okay? Ooh. Here's the deal. You buy one, you give one. Or you buy one for someone else, and you get one yourself for free. You know what I'm saying?
Double down.
Buy one, get one. Buy one, get one. B-O-G-O.
Nice.
So go to theathletic.com/glueguys. Brian, I can't believe I didn't do this. The Nets are back.
I know. It's truly happened. Actually, it'll happen again, but it's really happened. How did it feel? Did you watch? You watched.
I watched. It felt.
I watched close.
It felt amazing. It felt like.
Did a close preseason watch there, Mike.
Well, it didn't feel real still. It's because there was no fans. It just felt like what was happening. Like what alternate reality have we jumped into? Which portal that Doctor Strange has opened up to us in the Nets multiverse?
Yeah.
That where we ended up, that Tobey Maguire is our Spider-Man and Kevin Durant is a Brooklyn Net. I don't know, Brian, but it was a beautiful thing.
Can I put this bug into your ear and the ears of the people at Barclays or on Yes who are in charge of making this thing happen? So I watched a professional wrestling YouTube video from 2019. Shout out OSW Review. They do a great vodcast where they review old wrestling things, events. And in that, there was a moment where they talked about there was an augmented reality thing. So like when a wrestler comes into the ring, part of the overlay is like an augmented reality. There's like a giant moon or something floating around in the arena on the broadcast. I would like to incorporate some AR into the experience because, you know, it's great to watch Kevin Durant streaking for a dunk. But when they cut to those alternative angles and you see just the, you know, endless miles, the ocean of dark, empty seats, I feel like there's an opportunity that not to fill it with like AR fans. Like I'm talking about something super just visually stupid. Like I want a bunch of whatever Grim Reapers for the stupid. I don't know. That's bad. That's a bad idea. Don't do that.
Well, are we saying we're filling the seats with some symbol or is the whole backdrop suddenly like a winter wonderland? You know what I mean? Is it
here's what I am
like shot into Candyland here?
I am a idea rocket launcher. Okay, I've got a hammer, not a chisel. Okay, so I don't do details. I just put the bug in the ear. Okay, that's all I do. But anyways, just get the wheels turning out there, Nets Nation. You know, get the Twitter fired up. Let's do this.
Goddamn, Kevin Durant. So yes. Just in all honesty, I don't bet. Even though I think one of our sponsors is DraftKings. In fact, I know it is. Mm-hmm. I don't really bet, but I did lay down some cash on Kevin Durant for MVP.
Really?
I legit did.
Shut up.
I mean, I can go into my whole Kevin Durant is going to win the MVP bit.
That's a great – I think – did we do this on air? Because it's a great bit. I mean, it's,
we did it lightly, yeah. But here's like the heart of it, okay? Yeah. MVPs are built on two things, production and narratives. And if you look at the MVP odds, Luka's number one for a reason. Luka – because he has yet to win the MVP. He's an ascendant player. He's a stat stuffer. He's next on that James Harden, Giannis trajectory where he's the entire offense. I don't think it could be James. I don't think James Harden's like the number two odds. Cannot be him. Giannis is number three or two. I think we're all bored of Giannis, right? What can Giannis do in the regular season that's going to warrant MVP? Even if he, like, remember, Jordan didn't win it every year. I think it's Luka, or if Kevin Durant, having watched him for how many minutes? 25?
24 there. He's in the box score.
Having watched him for 24 minutes, he looks back. And I think the story of Kevin Durant probably playing like 27 points per game, 6 assists, 7 rebounds for the best team in the Eastern Conference, I think that's going to be a persuasive argument for voters come MVP time. So my prediction is Kevin Durant will win MVP, and it's good odds.
It's a solid meme. It's a small. What'd you put down? Go ahead, air it out.
$100.
Hey, wow.
Break big, the bank. A big hundo.
Watch out now.
Slapping Franklin all over the floor.
You're crazy, man.
What were your big brain thoughts of Kevin Durant? How excited were you when he made that move?
I have small brain thoughts about this entire game. I have lizard brain thoughts. It's a feelings argument that I have for this whole
thing.
Dump
them out to me, man. I'm here for you.
So I haven't, I kind of go back to that this is a thing that we've often invoked on the show, but the moment after we'd had a whole summer worth of talking about D'Angelo Russell versus Kyrie Irving, and then just watching Kyrie Irving come and drop 50 the first night live. And within the first 5 nanoseconds of the first possession, we were like, oh, that was a bad argument. That should not have been happening on any level, because it is just so self-evident how ascendant he is. That is also true of Kevin Durant. Like, I just began to really piece together just how powerful, how potent this offense could be here. Like, it could be like a real meme. And so not just to say that like those two guys are gravity sucking offensive nexuses, but like having the ball fart out to a Joe Harris or Spencer Dinwiddie on a broken play as your third and fourth options is like it's an embarrassment of riches, you know, offensively speaking. And people I was listening around to like the world of the NBA or whatever. And again, I will push back on this meme that like the Nets are just going to be horrific at defense. I will, until proven wrong, which could happen incredibly quickly. I don't see this as like a bunch of guys who are like particularly ill-equipped to play defense. So anyways, but that's neither here nor there. The real question is, does Kevin Durant make me a happy little boy, man, watching basketball? It sure does. It didn't, it fell right into place. It looked incredibly natural. I think that whole like conversation that happened over the summer about like left leg versus right leg, injuries on the Achilles. Like I was keeping that in mind the entire time. Obviously anytime somebody breathes on him, I want to jump through the screen and attack that person. Any Rui Hakamura roughness. I'm like, Get back to Tokyo, Rui. Enough of this. Wherever you're from, Osaka. So that's still like hovering in the back of my mind. Going to need a few more rips before that. But having him just sort of like streak to the rim, jumping effortlessly off the left foot, which is the foot that he did not, or the leg that he did not injure. I have a lot of confidence in all of that. Those mechanics and all that seemed very good. So anyways, that's a whole long-winded way of saying I'm pretty pleased with what I saw.
You're excited. Yeah. I mean, you basically got what was exciting about the game was you got to see everything that you would want to see out of Kevin Durant. So the first bucket, I mean, it was miraculous. It was spectacular. It was one of the greatest basketball moves I've ever seen in history, man. Mm-hmm. No, it was Kevin Durant gets the ball in the three-point line, a defender coming out at him. Durant makes a quick move laterally, drives to the hoop, and dunks in traffic, right? Like, what else at that point? You know, it was a meme of mine over this past year. Whenever we would get video of Kevin Durant biking or, you know, walking outside, I would say, you know, you need an Achilles to bike. Mm. Well, you need an Achilles to make a lateral movement and dunk the basketball in traffic.
There it is.
And not only was it offense, like you forget of how like just a beautiful player he is. Like you forget that he is silky smooth. And when he hits a shot, it just is like perfect. And it looks unlike anyone else because no one is that height that can shoot that way and from that variety of angles. You know, Dirk was his predecessor in that sense. But it was the defense. Like when you talk about the defense, about the team. Durant, I think he had like two blocks in this game. He was D'ing up dudes. Durant, before the game, in a couple of media sessions, was talking about how Nash is going to play him at the five, which, thank you. You're welcome, Steve Nash, for that idea. That came from
us. You're the only guy that was saying it, Mike. That's all you. Yeah.
You're welcome, Steve Nash. But it was everything. He handled the ball. He received the ball off the catch and drove to the basket. He dished it. He blocked shots. He D'd up Rui Hachimura.
Can Denny we also...
Abdiha.
Denny.
Hey, Denny, very good job.
Yeah. Denny looks good. Denny looks good. Get kind of an international squad out there. Your Mo Wagners, your Denny's, your Raul Neto's.
It's kind of shameless by the Wizards because D.C. is a very international city.
True.
Like New York.
True.
There's embassies here. There's literal pockets of people from all over the world.
Well, flexing a little. Okay. Cool.
And I'm a little dubious. So I grew up a Wizards fan, as everyone probably knows. I feel like it's targeted. They're just like, what markets can we... Because like, there's only one good Israeli. And there's only one good Japanese basketball player. And they have acquired both of those people, you know? And what is the next country that they could take? Well, China. China, if you get the next good Chinese basketball player, you're dominating.
They got dibs.
God, it was dope, Brian.
Can we also talk about Kyrie Irving playing a little defense too? I mean, he had like stupid little, like he was not giving up on any play. I'm saying like, he's been having a month, and we can maybe touch on some pawns and prawns. And anyways, we don't actually have to. I don't need to, but I will say that like I was a little bit stressed out by how hard he was going on foregone fast breaks and things like that, trying to swat things out of the air. So anyways, I like the idea that Kyrie Irving is not motivated to. At least he knows what to do on first night, which is do the PR thing of playing super hard defense in a preseason game to just, you know, to get that, to plant that PR seed, Mike. Whether or not he continues it all season, we shall see.
Plus minus is silly at times, but I'm going to use it here. You know what's interesting is that the Nets starting lineups plus minus wasn't that good. Actually, the Wizards plus minus was better for their starting lineup against the Nets. Now, obviously, they didn't play against each other, but it was evident that when Kyrie and KD are on the floor together, no matter who else is around them, it's just a devastating offensive force. You know who didn't have a good night though?
Who?
Moneybags Joe. And so I'm not even, this isn't like, are we worried about Joe? That's not this segment. But I'm going to make it a positive in that the Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving look so good that they forgot that Joe Harris is like a weapon to be used. Right. I think they were both of the mindset that like, you know, we're going to try to work and get our buckets right now. I mean, Durant literally, I think, needed that psychologically to be on an actual basketball court and do that. Joe, like, wasn't a factor in those lineups.
You know what moment I liked in the broadcast was when Sarah Kustog Kustak sandbagged Ryan Rucco on his joke about so apparently the story is Joe Harris botched a dunk in practice, and DeAndre Jordan famously now called out, is all that money holding you down, Joe? And Sarah, after hearing that, was like, so that was the third time I've heard that. Something to that effect, which is like, that's just the one joke that's going around camp, I guess. Which is funny. But so, yeah, so Joe Harris got paid, and now he's a complete drag on our cap sheet.
He's and, the next Torian
yeah,
Prince.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Torian Prince, a lot of these guys, I feel like are going to really benefit from this. I mean, the Landry Shamet, let me just say, he was way more athletic than I initially thought of him. I thought of him as sort of like a feminine hipped bro, like, you know, one of those guys. He is not that way.
You know, I think like biologically, like feminine hips should be larger, Brian. You know, if you think about it, right?
That's what I'm saying. I thought he had those.
That's a positive.
And he doesn't. I mean, it can be a positive. It's a different archetype, different build. It's the Sergey, the Karasev build is what I'm sort of.
The Karasev build is.
The Karasev.
It's a scouting term for anyone that looks exactly like Sergey Karasev. Yeah. And you know that he is not a shot to ever be an athlete.
It's a diet that's rich in trans fats and cigarettes. that kind of diet, which Landry Shamet seems to
have. Smoking those trans fat cigarettes, actually. Yeah. He combined them.
Just butter-flavored hookah. But Landry Shamet is a like super mobile and actually had a little bit more ball handling than I thought. He was like trying to make shit happen on fast breaks, which I didn't think he had in him. So I got my eye on Trouboy as a little steal at flipping a 19th pick.
Well, this leads perfectly into my next segment. Let's take a quick break and then we'll dive right into it.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, so we were just talking about Landry Shamet here, and this leads into my what I'm calling bad puns, good reactions.
Okay.
Bad puns, good reactions. First up, ShamWow, Landry Shamet.
Nice.
As you were saying, I mean, movement all around the court. You know, Doc Rivers is known to love this kind of player, like J.J. Redick, he had it. And he had it in, you know, J.J. Redick with the Clippers, and he had it with Landry Shamet with the Clippers for that 1 year. Shamet's just moving all over the floor, creating a little bit of havoc. Not that he had like an amazing shooting night, but you could tell immediately that he's going to fit around Durant and Irving, right? Like he's gonna be the comet around those two, the twin sons that is the Tatooine skyline of the Brooklyn Nets. And you're right. There was like ball handling in there. There was more than just like stand in the corner and shoot threes, bro.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Anthony Morrow. It was
no
Sham Wow.
Yes,
it was a Sham Wow moment. Nice.
Nicely done.
I'll go to my next one, and then you can kind of hop in to it. I must be in Kevin. I must be in heaven. That's a pun.
That's good. That's good work. That's good.
I told you about MVP. I think, you know, there's a good shot. If I would have placed money, which I did, on MVP, I would bet it on him. Again, I think the best piece is the defense, though. I think if, you know, Durant is like his offensive game, everyone has said this, he doesn't need explosive athleticism to still be a threat. But defensively, that the fact that he was, you know, all over the floor at times, absolutely loved it. Who stood out to you? So we did Durant, you did Kyrie, we
We had ShamWow. Anyone else that felt like bubbled for you? I mean, people were loving Reggie Perry on Twitter.
Yeah, Reggie, I noticed
Reggie
that.
Perry's getting like a lot of
the Reggie Perry push. It feels like, not to keep talking about wrestling, I have been in a wrestling K-hole recently, though. But like when the company kind of like just comes over the top and like pushes a new guy as like and like it's sort of like, well, this is the guy we're going to do. This is the guy who we're doing a big push for. OK, so, yeah, the Reggie Perry thing is interesting. I did want to talk quickly about Kevin Durant's defense, which I found interesting, too, which was I didn't realize how like sort of handsy it was. He's got really great timing with like intercepting people who are trying to like pull the ball into their like crossover move and things like that. He's just super skilled with like the timing of his hands. It's real. And they're big, big old mitts. It gets right in your way. It's like really interesting to watch how like Rui Hachimura was like, you know, pretty much stymied by a lot of that, except for a couple of, he got some nasty points here and there. But
are you worried that the score, like, I've seen some people get worried that the Nets didn't win by more against a Wizards team that didn't have Beal or Westbrook. Like, how should we feel about the score of the game?
I am always amazed at how fast people, like, how that cognitive bias, like, just turns on and off. Like, the like, it's just a preseason game setting is only up and until, you know, if you start winning by 20 points, then it's like, okay, now the game becomes about we have to win this preseason game. And, you know, that's not real. That's not a real thing that's happening in the world. None of the outcome matters. We're trying things out. It's a fun little experiment, a taste of what you want to see. And none of the outcomes truly matter. I mean, the outcomes matter in only like isolated incidents. Does this half-court set look functional? Does it not? Everything that I saw from that, like, you can't look at this game and think, like, we're not going to have a really... I looked at this game as, like, the one big piece of evidence is that I think we're not going to lose to bad teams very often at all. That's sort of, like, where which is, like, one of the main data points you need for a super competitive team. You don't lose to bad teams.
Yeah, and I think, like...
And just to put one last final point on that, not in that like we actually came out of the preseason game here with a win. That's not relevant to me. It's just the function of playing that kind of half court basketball was so dominant when it needed to be that for me I can extend that into the future and say like that's going to work for us.
I don't like to predict win totals just because I have no sense of what they should be. Like I just don't like look at a team and think like that is a 54 win team.
Right.
Like that's just not part of my brain. I think headlines, think big picture, you know me.
And I do think like post 73 win Warriors that matters less to people. I mean, people have like started to really figure out load management and getting into the playoffs and not caring so much about that.
But let's say they don't make a trade and this is the roster that they have. So I think when you look at wins, like the difference between the past few years to this year, beyond like the glaring top line talent of Kevin Durant, is the fact that there were games in the past few seasons when the Nets were good that they would lose to like a bad team, or it would be extremely like they would lose to bad Grizzlies, right? They would have those games. And I think those games are basically going to be eliminated. They're still going to lose to bad teams, but for the most part, I think the talent will be so overwhelming that it's just not going to matter. And the other increment to bump up for the Nets is the fact that end of games now, you know, before, I mean, Spencer Dinwiddie has been maligned on Twitter for his end of game shots. And actually, if you looked at the statistics, it's not as bad as you maybe think it is. And we extrapolate it as, now they're going to have Kyrie and KD taking those end of game shots. And it's going to become, if it's a tight game, it's going to continue to be extremely hard for another team to defend the Brooklyn Nets at the end of games. When before it was like, four guys in the corner and let Dinwiddie cook.
Yeah.
And while Dinwiddie is certainly, you know, a fine dining, I don't want to say a chef, but he's the guy who handles the vegetables in a fine dining restaurant. Mm. He's not David Chang. He's not.
He juliennes the carrots. Is that what you're saying?
Juliennes the carrots. Yeah. He peels the skin off zucchini because in this restaurant they don't want the skin on their zucchini. They like a naked zucchini.
Yeah.
And they kind of mix it in with a sauce and it really kind of melts in. very nicely.
Cucumber skins are for the plebes, Mike. We all know that.
For the pawns.
Yes, for the pawns.
Sorry.
Yes.
But, and I do, we do, I do want to talk about that for a moment, but we don't do it now. I think you brought up something with Torian Prince earlier. So Zach Lowe, I believe in his column of like guys who are going to have a bounce back year, Zach mentioned Torian Prince as being one of those players.
Mm-hmm.
I have been very down on Mr. Prince. But I think if, as long as he knows that all he has to do is to stand in the corner and shoot threes and then rebound, like if he does those two things, he's going to be doing just great. And he had a good game, 11 points, 3 for 4 from three. He had his worst season last year from three, and he usually shoots around 40%. I think he's going to do that, if not better, this year. Mm-hmm. And if he's that, then like you look at your bench shooters and to have Torian Prince coming off the bench and then like Bruce Brown's coming in there. Landry Shamet's a bench player on this team. Very few teams have like starters who are that good at shooting, and the Nets are going to have that in their bench.
There was a moment when it was probably third quarter, right, when everything was going badly, and there was like a kind of a funky two-man game between Joe Harris and Torian Prince that like eventually got bobbled and like farted out of bounds. And I was like, you know what? Like that was such a perfect microcosm of like what we get to not see very much this season. Like that's a preseason thing that like it'll happen once or twice. But that used to be like truly those guys were getting 30 minutes a game. I mean, like Joe Harris will continue to do that, but like and needing to play off each other in a way that they just will not need to. It was like a vestige of last year that we could just pull them aside and be like, hey guys, no two-man game in the corner, you two. That's it. You don't have to do that anymore. We have so much more going for us. That wasn't good for us last year, and you can relieve yourself. You're relieved of that.
Well, and I don't think we've touched on him yet, and here's my next bad pun, good reactions. The Nets lineup needs some TLC.
Oh, yeah.
Timothy Luwalu-Cabarrot
is a player, dude. He's got a real like. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No. You well, you're gonna say what I want to be told.
Yeah.
I feel like he's been a forgotten man this offseason. Not that like we should, not every day we should be waking up thinking about Timothy Luwalu-Cabarrot, though I do. I understand not everyone else.
You start the day.
Every day. Loved his mustache, by the way.
I did like that. Very French.
Deserves to be on his face.
Yeah.
But. He's not a miraculous game, you know, 11 points, 3 for 5 from the field, 4 for 5 from the line, but he just like brings like a level of competency from a wing position where it's tough to find a lot of guys like him, and he's super cheap. And I can see like, this is way extrapolating, but there's a possibility that he carves out potential closing lineup time in various games, just because he's a bit taller, he can shoot, and he doesn't do anything else on the floor to distract from the main event that is Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Like, he doesn't require anything but to stand in the corner, and then when he gets the ball, he's going to put it up. And that's a skill.
Even more, I would say, like, he's getting better at hitting, like, difficult and or contested shots, which is not something that he was able to do when we first sort of started to see him. But now he's, like, he's got enough reps in where if that defender is closing out on him on the corner, they have to be closing out real hard, like, block hard, in order to disrupt it, because that thing feels like it's going in.
And it's not like, again, I'm not like going crazy. I don't want to go crazy with Timothy Luwalu-Cabarrot. I just think that in your closing lineups, you're always going to have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. I don't think you're going to have a center. I think Joe Harris will always be out there because you want a premier shooter. And so you have two spots to play with. It could be Dinwiddie. It probably will be LeVert. But Cabarrot is like just a wing. Not he's a great defender, but he's a wing who has athleticism and he has the ability to just sort of sit in a role and not try to expand out of it. We're like, Torian Prince is a little too wild child for me.
Sure. I mean, I think like the macro philosophy of the team began to make itself known after watching like Jeff Green and Reggie Perry play like center minutes, like some bruiser brother center minutes. And Jeff Green like canned up straight on three, and Reggie Perry's first points were a kind of clanked home top of the elbow jumper. And it became clear to me that Sean Marks is just like, I want shooters at literally every position as often as I possibly can, which jives with, you know, modern conceptions of basketball. Again, what that means for DeAndre Jordan, Jared Allen's experience is going to be, that for me is like one of the main question marks, is like, are these guys, you pointed out on the show and in a super influential tweet, that really set the world on fire, which was like with all this Jeff Green small ball five talk and to a lesser extent, Reggie Perry, you know, where does that put DeAndre Jordan, Jared Allen? And to that point, that still is to me the only like political rejiggering we're going to need to focus on throughout the season. DeAndre Jordan looked like he came in a bit heavy this season. I'll say that. I don't want to be the guy that's being judgmental and body shaming. That's not, you know, we're not toxic masculine on the show. We'll say he looked like he came in a little overweight.
Yeah. And yeah, we did get at least one, if not two, Dinwiddie to DeAndre Jordan terrible alley-oop situation where
they really can just stop that. Like what is
just
what is,
stop.
If he doesn't have the lift like he used to. It's not the timing, it's the lift.
Feels cruel at this point.
It does.
It feels like he's like
that's
I don't know what it is. It's like he
just exposing his weaknesses over. Yeah. Like, remember when you used to be able to get that? You fucking
you old man. You decrepit old overpaid man.
Yeah.
Here, catch this alley-oop. You bum.
I know. It's like, we're like, yeah, the timing is off. It's like, it's not the timing. It's not Spencer Dinwiddie's fault. It's his fault for watching 2011 DeAndre Jordan clips and thinking that that's still relevant.
My favorite part about it is always Dinwiddie's body language as he's making the pass is like, it's like nonchalant and it's sort of almost like, it's always almost a no look. Because he in his mind, I think, visualizes DeAndre Jordan throwing down a monster slam.
Mm-hmm.
And so his body language is like, this is dope, what I'm about to do here.
Yeah.
And every time DeAndre like flails into the air, his hair goes all over the place and he's nowhere close to the ball. It's sad. Don't do it to DeAndre.
These aren't
probably
near
like
misses.
30 years old, but don't do it to him anymore.
This isn't close. They're not happening.
He's 32, by the way. He's our age, so always my age. What year were you born?
I'm 33 now. Yeah.
Jeez.
All you babies.
That's what I thought. Yeah. But to go back to the center thing, so like Jared Allen did not have a good game, but that's fine. Like I'm not stressed about it. DeAndre had like a completely fine game, but you know, we talk about it, and you and I all off season were wondering how Steve Nash was going to answer the is DeAndre Jordan or Jared Allen starting, and he chose DeAndre Jordan, at least in preseason game one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you said something that I think could happen into the future, which is like Nash telling Jared Allen, like, hey, why don't you play your ass off and earn this position and make it like without a shadow of a doubt that you're the starter so that I can go to Kevin and Kyrie and say, listen, like, I know you guys love DeAndre, but Jared Allen is playing so much better. I think that is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Nets are going small ball at times with Jeff Green at the five or Reggie Perry just being a monster off the bench, apparently.
Could be.
Probably. Or just Kevin Durant, you know, mm-hmm. a good player, pretty good player. It's going to make it a kind of an awkward situation for your center rotation for two guys that definitely believe that they should be getting more minutes than they are.
Mm.
I'll do one final bad pun, good reaction. Deep bent. Oh, excuse me. Deep bench. I screwed up. Deep net. This means the Nets have a deep bench. They are a deep net. The net is, it's a deep net.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, sorry.
Good. No, that's good work. I enjoyed it.
Just think for a second, Brian.
Okay.
The Nets starting lineup in this game, Kyrie, Spencer, Joe Harris, KD, and DeAndre Jordan. Their bench, Jeff Green, Torian Prince, Jared Allen, TLC, and Shamet. LeVert was injured, and Bruce Brown didn't play, which was curious.
We did go 14 deep. It's pretty deep.
And it's too deep.
Yeah.
It's actually a problem. Like, you can't have that many guys who
probably think they should be playing minutes. Like, that doesn't work in basketball. You just, because like it's great to have Bruce Brown as a reserve role, like it's not going to be good for Bruce Brown's life if he's not playing basketball at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to become a sort of a nagging thing that could be happening. Not, I'm not saying Bruce Brown specifically. I'm just saying overall players on this team. But damn, Nets are deep. It looks like they're so deep that they could make a trade maybe at some point. I don't know.
Could be.
Have you heard about that?
I have heard some musings. One of the things too that sort of jumped off the page was Rhodey getting the true dregs of the preseason game. And just thinking about, like, he started in playoff games 2 years ago. Like, he's literally starting in playoff games and looking good and seemingly like being part of. And now we just hear about Reggie Evans. I'm going to do that so
much. Oh, no.
I put that hex on you. And you know what's the problem is, like, I can already tell he's sort of a Reggie Evans kind of, like, it'll be easy to be like, why are we playing Reggie Perry so many? He's like the 50 millionth pick or whatever. Anyways, I don't want to put that voodoo out there. That can't happen. What was I saying? I was talking
Reggie
about
Reggie Perry. How?
I was talking about Rhodey.
Rhodey, yeah.
Anyways, not to, like, you know, bury the dude any further, but, like, we maybe owe it to him to get him some other place to play as part of that. Just because, like, he had such potential. I think his value still is, like, I don't know. I don't know what value there is out there for Rhodey. I mean, I think that people would – I think there's something there just because, like, he was a big question mark, but it's low, and he's just not going to get any minutes this season. It's just not going to happen. So I feel bad. I want what's best for Rhodians.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Like before, you and I advocated for his – like, for him to get more minutes because he brought a certain dynamicism –
Dynamics? Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Dynastic quality? No, not dynastic quality. But he brought something. He brought some energy to the floor that...
Dinosaur energy, I think it was.
Yeah, dinosaur energy. Yeah. But this team doesn't really need that, the chaos.
No, we don't need... X-Factors are not invited. I don't need you. That's the thing. I don't need X-Factors.
We want stability.
Executors, yeah.
We want the mustachioed Timothy Luwalo-Cabarro, who is going to provide... That's also... I mean... I really shouldn't talk about Tyler Johnson anymore. I guess I'm just wrong, and everyone else loves him, and he should be on this team forever. I'd rather have Chris Chioza than Tyler Johnson getting any of my minutes, but I understand Chioza's not quite tall enough to defend.
Chioza's great. I have nothing but good things to say about Chioza, although people will continue to dog him a little. It seems like you're in one of two camps. There is a divide going on. There's the Tyler Johnson camp, and I will say, though, I've enjoyed Tyler Johnson's. Sort of riffraff look. Do you know who Riffraff is?
Sort of
YouTube rapper. He's kind of came out looking like Riffraff.
It's funny that you are referencing Riffraff.
Yeah. Why? What is that?
I feel like Riffraff's time has come and gone.
You know what
is
else?
Riffraff
rebranded
rapper?
As Jody High Roller, which is another good name. He's got a bunch of good names. He's got a good taste. He's like a curator. He's got great taste.
Like Jody Foster?
Yeah. Like Jody High Roller. But Tyler Johnson's one, like, Lisa Simpson tattoo away from going full riffraff.
Tyler Johnson more looks like someone on the dance crew of the Nets than an actual Nets basketball player. Like, yeah, I could see him coming out with a t-shirt cannon and firing into empty stands. It's a real, you know, we don't talk about this enough, Brian. The pandemic has been really tough on certain industries.
Oh yeah. I was
the t-shirt cannon article, business.
There was a big article about like all the, you know, guys working at the stadiums and stuff getting furloughed indefinitely.
I'm thinking more in the manufacturing of t-shirt cannons.
Well, you know what how I feel about t-shirt cannons. Lethal and dangerous.
Did I know that going in?
Well, I broke my finger because I got shot in the hand and I broke my finger.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, and I have one final. Do you have anything else from the game? Because I have one final bad pun, good reaction that will sort of wrap up the show.
Yeah, wrap fully. That up.
Kyrie via River.
Wow.
Media.
Nice.
No. Okay, so this is the segment of the show where we're going to discuss. Kyrie did have a media availability today, his first one of the season, but obviously Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and MySpace were set aflame when Kyrie Instagrammed, I think it was this weekend on Friday, about how he doesn't talk to pawns. Mm. That he put out a statement, you know, why he didn't participate in Media Day. And then, like, the next day on IG, he said, like, I don't talk to pawns. He had a whole thing.
Do you think he's been watching Queen's Gambit? I mean, like, honestly, the invocation of pawn at a time where chess could not be hotter.
Could not be hotter. Yeah.
Seems like he's been
Have
watching.
You watched Queen's Gambit?
I did. I like, dunked it in, like, a day or two.
Beautiful.
Get really good.
Just really delicious. Yeah. So here's why it's called Kyrie Me a River. Media. Mm-hmm. All right. So I am a member of the media. I think it's...
Wow. Self-appointed member of the media.
I think it's hurtful to Kyrie himself by not talking with the media. And obviously, he did talk to the media today, so it's a little bit different. But my main thing is that I think we're all kind of going... People were going hysterical about Kyrie not talking to the media at the beginning. One, because it was kind of reported that he was in a media blackout fully for the full season.
Well, he didn't make it clear. That's a little on him. It seemed that way when I read it.
And this is where I kind of turn it back on Kyrie. So when you choose Instagram as your outlet to the world, one, you can't explain yourself fully on Instagram. And you're also not allowing yourself to, like, let's say you say something in a press scrum with all the Nets reporters, and you say something that you feel like you didn't cleanly state, and maybe the purpose of your words got muddled up, you can, in that press briefing, say, hey guys, by the way, the thing I said like 5 minutes ago, I mean this, my words kind of came out incorrectly. Mm-hmm. When you just on Instagram put up a black card with some writing and some a Star David emoji, not sure what was happening there, you kind of lead to us guessing what you mean as opposed to us actually taking your message. So Kyrie is doing himself a disservice by not engaging with the media, because part of the media's job is actually to correctly interpret what you mean.
Wow. Dangerous. Let me jump
even
in
more
here.
Than your words.
Let me jump in here.
Yeah.
Let me jump in here and advocate for myself, because I see a job opportunity here. Proofreader. All Kyrie needs is a proofreader, and it doesn't have to be, you know, I'm throwing my hat in the ring. I know a former life. I worked in publishing. Okay. I got the credentials, edited a few books in my day. No big deal, you know, but I'm a helpful communicator on behalf of other people. Kyrie, netspot@gmail.com. You know where to find us. I do think that it is, you just need to clean up a little bit of these sentence structures here and there. Just massage that message just a little bit. Take down the emotional tenor.
Pawns.
The pawns was a little much. We didn't need to go there, did we? I felt it was like also like you know, using like the triple parentheses, like the media, the pawns, like there's some like massive scale conspiracy to like undermine what people are saying. You know, that kind of stuff, which I think is dangerous territory. So yeah, there's a couple of things I would clean up, Mike. But again, I still insist that I'm in favor of the Instagram black box. It just needs to be doing more work on your behalf. Netspot@gmail. Hit me up.
And Kyrie was asked, during his media briefing, Kyrie was asked about the pawns comment. And I just want to pull it up so I get it correctly. It was basically like, I think when he used the word pawns, he then cleaned it up today to mean like, oh, it wasn't just about the media. This is what he said. Irving said, this is from Alex Schiffer at The Athletic. Irving said his focus is on what's going on with the Nets in the locker room. Didn't want distractions. Said the pawns comment was directed more broadly than media. Well, that's your fault, Kyrie, for doing that, because the conversation was that you wouldn't do media. And then the first thing that you post about after not doing media is saying you're not talking to pawns.
The problem with that clarification, too, is that it still does include the media. You're like, it's more broadly than just you. It's you and others.
And so, okay, like, so what does this matter for the Nets? It obviously doesn't really matter because it's an unusual season. So we kind of ran through this last time, but in typical seasons when the media, the press, who are conduits to the fans, players to fans, fans to players, is that in locker rooms, the media is there. If the star player's in there, they try to talk to the role players. So if the star players aren't answering the questions, then people like Reggie Perry are having to answer for the whole of the team. And ultimately, Kyrie matters more than what Reggie Perry has to say in a certain situation, right? Like, so Kyrie, by not talking, is putting more pressure on Kevin Durant, Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert. They may not feel that now because it's early in the season, but they will if Kyrie continues to sort of not do media availability and then do it. I just think it doesn't serve him well. Like, the best thing to do would just to have a powwow, have an off-the-record Zoom with all the Nets media reporters and just be like, hey, guys, I'm going to be open and honest with you this year. I'll be talking to you guys on a regular basis. You know, I'm going to keep it a little bit limited. I'd like, you know, I'll try to be respectful of your time. Try to be respectful of mine. Like, be reasonable. A little bit of honey goes a long way. A little bit of honey. And instead, he's going black box on Instagram, emojis that I'm still trying to figure out. He put a Jewish star in a shout emoji at the bottom of that thing. Was that for Hanukkah or is that for something else? I mean, could go one of two ways.
He's like pro Judaism
or he's really against it and scares me.
I love the idea that this gets kicked down to Reggie Perry, the skilled interlocutor who's going to be like shoulder. He's like, hey, can you talk about whether the Star of David was about crypto Jews in the media or is it about, just saying, it's, you know, Hanukkah?
The antenna's up a little bit about like what did that mean? But anyways, and Kyrie also, by the way, Kyrie, and you probably didn't see this, he did apologize for his Steve Nash comment. When Kyrie went on his friend's podcast, not a media interview, but his friend Kevin Durant's podcast, and said that they may not have a head coach this year, meaning like they may not need to like listen to Steve Nash. Kyrie literally made a comment today where he was like, I need to apologize for Steve about what I said a few months back, like jokingly in a nice way. And so Kyrie is doing, when he actually talks to the media, he does well. It's when he doesn't talk to the media is when he doesn't do well. Mm. And I would just say, hey, but just open up a little bit.
Mike, why are you not advocating for me to have this job? I don't get it. I don't see it. And why are you out to get me?
What emojis do you want to put at me?
You pawn. I'm not talking to you anymore.
That's just a little, it's a little crappy.
It's a bit much.
Can I say one other thing?
Yeah,
that I noticed during the game. Did you notice how Steve Nash would react when Kyrie would make a basket or make a good play?
I didn't notice.
Very emphatic. I just want you to just watch out. It seemed like every time Kyrie made a good play, I could see Nash, you can see Nash at the top of the screen as the camera shifts over to the Wizards side of the court. He was like really pointing at Kyrie every time, clapping it up, getting up, really like Nash is trying. I feel like I know he knows that if he can solve the Kyrie puzzle, then this team can win a championship. I think that's what he's assessed.
I liked the vibe of the whole, they cut to him a couple of times and his like unblinkingly staring at the, like a hole through somebody's head in the court. And it's like very nice icy stare from day one. I also love D'Antoni's like grandpa vibe with the like, just leg crossed up high. I'm not getting up for any reason. This is my chair. Nobody touch my chair. I expect by February, he'll have a blanket over his legs while he's doing that. maybe a cup of cider going, who knows? But yeah, it's a nice tandem there. It's a good vibe. Also Jacques Vaughn's new long gray beard, very Gandalf. I've enjoyed that. So lots of good visual cues on the sidelines here.
I know you're not much on Twitter, but did you see, so Kyrie had like an Instagram live thing.
But we gonna see though, is that was so good.
What?
When Kevin Durant's like, no, but we're gonna see though, after he goes on this long tirade about the post-ups.
Okay, well, here's about, so if you haven't seen it, it's floating around it on Twitter. You can definitely see it. So Kyrie had a sort of like informal players only session on his Instagram where like Caris LeVert came in and they talked for a bit, and him and Kevin Durant talked for a bit. And there was one particular clip that was like 80 seconds long where Kyrie was talking about how he wants to get like 8 post-up touches a game because he talks on and on about, you know, like he's talking to Kevin Durant. He's like, I'm like you in my head. I'm you. And if I get to a spot, I'll hit a shot. And he's like talking about, you know, how great he could be as a post-up player. And Durant's kind of like laughing at him, like not telling if he's serious or not, and saying basically, you're not doing that. Like, that would be bad offense. So there's actually another clip that shows more of the conversation leading into that moment that makes it seem more jokey. And I think it's enlightening because I think Kyrie's the kind of person who is a guy who commits to the bit. Okay.
Right.
So Kyrie, I think he was joking. I mean, you can see when the other clip that's extended, the extended featurette, you know, the Francis Ford Coppola presents Mario Puzo's Godfather Part 3 Mea Culpa, the extended edition. Kyrie he's the type of person where when he's making a joke, one, he doesn't have the intonation in his voice that he's making a joke. So it makes it sound like he's serious. And two, I think he loves the process of even though it's a joke, it could be the flat earth thing or whatever, he loves the process of just arguing a viewpoint, even if he himself doesn't believe in it.
It's practical, a practical joker.
And I think that does him harm again.
Practical joking is low EQ. I'll say it all day, every day. I grew up with a mom who was very anti-practical joking, didn't allow it on any level. And to this day, when I see a practical joker who's like takes your, I don't know, a thing and hides it from you, and that's the joke, it's like that's low EQ. That's just low EQ behavior. No, you know, and not to throw Kyrie into that kind of lowbrow humor. That's really bottom barrel, but it's on the spectrum, I would say.
Yeah, and George Clooney is known as being a big practical joker on a movie set.
Yeah,
and I was always like, is that really fun for anyone?
No.
Is that a good time?
It's awful.
Are we having we're putting Nespresso cups in people's shoes?
Yeah.
George Clooney is sponsored by Nespresso. Yeah. That was the best thing to come up with.
No, I got it. It was good.
But anyways, I think I tell people, find the clip. It's on Twitter if you haven't seen it yet. Kyrie talking about post-up touches with Kevin Durant. It sounds like Kyrie's being serious. I think he's joking, and I think it reveals that he maybe isn't he doesn't have great intonation when he's delivering jokes.
Or he has great intonation. I mean, he's great at disguising it.
Yeah, he's great at disguising it. That's his form of comedy. Yeah. It's very dry British, you know, that kind of style. All right.
Get up.
So we have there's more preseason games to be had, and then the season starts. I mean, let's look at the Brooklyn Nets schedule. We can finally do it.
We got Friday, and then we're on Tuesday. National TV, Miguel.
Holy smokes. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So it's exciting. We'll be here. We'll eventually do a season-ish, preview-ish more. But,
there's so much more.
Games are starting, so we're going to talk a lot more.
Yeah. Mike?
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, thanks.
Appreciate it. Appreciate the invite.
Yeah, you're welcome.